How Very Strange is a weird, quirky, fun podcast for adults. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. You can also find links to the episode topics in the description because this podcast contains spoilers. You've been warned. Welcome to How Very Strange. It's a podcast where three friends consume obscure content and then we talk about it. I'm Whitney Clater.
I'm Carrie McConnell.
And I'm Paige Scott.
And oh my god, what? We have a guest. Who is it?
Who is it? Oh, hi. My name is Nicholas Rohrman.
Hi, Nicholas Rohrman.
Hi. I am Carrie's brother.
Yay! Yes.
Bobo! And I'm the co-creator of So Far So Good, Sketch Comedy, and Schlimp Corp.
Ooh!
Yes. Not to mention, we have heard some stories about when Nick was a baby on this podcast. So your context.
Yes.
There you go. I'm the baby that has been mentioned. Not the one baby, but that other baby.
That other baby. Yeah, yeah. Not Jack. This is Nick.
Well, and then we've got the other baby.
Right, and then the other baby.
The other baby.
I'm the third baby, but technically also the first.
Technically the first baby. So this week, we are talking about Repo, the Genetic Opera, and Paige has done the dramaturgy, kind of, on this week's episode.
Kind of.
Done.
Paige, don't fuck it up. I'm so excited about this.
I am actually excited about this, so...
Same.
This movie, it's a treat. From 2008, written by Darren Smith and Terrence Zunanik. I think that's the name, right?
Your guess is as good as mine, my
dear. Okay. I mean... Zunanik.
Put some respect on the triple threat. Put some respect on that name.
I'm sorry if that is not indeed the name. But these two actually began writing this in 1999 as a band called The Gallery. And they would do these shows around Los Angeles in like 10-minute increments of like 10-minute steampunk operas. And one of these so-called 10-minute operas was called The Necro Merchant's Debt. And people lost their minds over it. So they decided to expand it and it became Repo, the Genetic Opera. So, I'm just going to get right into a plot because it's pretty wild.
Get into it,
yes.
In
the year 2056, there is a global pandemic that causes random organ failures in most human beings, and it completely devastates the planet. That's the bad news. The good news is that corporate capitalistic medical suppliers are there to help you.
I don't think that's good news, Paige.
Good old GeneCo.
In the form of GeneCo, for which the CEO, his name is Rotissimo Roddy Largo, played by National Treasure Paul Sorvino. And GeneCo supplies, you know, random organs around the world, all kinds of body
Whatever
parts.
Organ you might need.
You want a spleen?
Yeah.
Anything.
Take a spleen. You want a heart? Take a heart. You want a brand new face? Here, take 7. But there is a catch. If you cannot keep up with those payments, a repo man will come and collect these organs.
Repo man!
And that is the universe for which this musical takes place.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And in the beginning, you see like comic book kind of animated series of expositional facts. You get character profiles.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was awesome. The comic book sequence.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Straight and they continue point. Throughout the movie periodically to give backstory to
beautiful,
a character.
Beautiful.
And
yeah.
I loved the way it did that because it was beautifully illustrated. And it gave you so much information in a very compact way.
Oh, and it didn't waste your time.
Yeah.
That's the end of my plot summary because most of it is very complex and with a lot of
that's
moving.
The end of your
plot summary. That's the world that we're getting.
That's not even plot. That's
yeah,
background.
That's not plot. That's just the world.
Yeah.
That's the world. Okay.
It's world building.
Okay,
Paige.
It's world building. Okay. So All right, you want more?
Yes.
I want more.
The audience wants more.
The audience wants more. We'll give them more. So Paul Sorvino has three really annoying kids, one with a face, oh. one that was Paris Hilton, and one that was just like really grumpy, and I'm not quite sure what
one, that one was with a face. Paris
Hilton. Well, okay, while we're on the subject of the kids, can I ask? All right, we've got Paris Hilton, Amber Sweet, who changed her last name from Largo to Sweet. Or is it Luigi is the like dickhead, and then the guy who switches out his face, Pavi?
Pavi?
Pavi.
Why is he the only one with an accent?
Because all of the
He's
face
bougie.
Injuries that he had have had an effect on his larynx and
oh,
the
that?
Way that his mouth is shaped. And when your mouth is shaped differently, then you have a different way of speaking and a different affect, or at least that's my bullshit explanation.
Your theory's better than mine, because I thought that he bought another accent from Gene Co.
Oh,
he bought an accent.
I mean, my thought is he, do we have confirmation that he's biological child? I think that's a valid theory.
I mean,
theory.
No.
Do we have confirmation
Nothing's
that
guaranteed.
Any of them are their, are biological
no.
children?
We do
I
not
think Rhodey is the kind of guy to just grab children, you know, and just be like,
yeah,
they're my child
now. I
would
now. Agree. Oh, yeah.
As is
agree.
Evident later
especially,
in the movie.
Yeah, especially given what we know with the final few scenes and songs.
Well, so. We don't know anything about their mother because, you know, he was in love with Marnie, what, 19 years ago, so.
17.
Those 17. Well, 17 years ago is when Shiloh was born. Mm-hmm. He was with Marnie like 19 years ago and mm-hmm. she mm-hmm. left him. So mm-hmm.
for Dr. Nathan
older than Shiloh. So they had a mother. We don't know anything about that mother. What happened to her? Did she leave? Did she die? Did Roddy murder her? Probably.
Probably.
he's going to take it to his grave. He said so.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
she faithful?
Nah.
Yeah, who knows?
Nah.
Oh, there you go. The Pavi was just the child of some Italian dude.
And the accent was just genetic.
Was hereditary, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that's how accents work.
That's totally
how
accents
work.
It's why I sound so Irish.
Yeah.
When your name's when your name's Pavi, I think that is how accents work.
Yeah.
I think that you grow up with that name and you're like, well, I guess I have to be French Italian now.
He was also a fashion designer.
Yeah.
I mean, he also was a fashion designer and designed faces. I don't know. I don't know what any of his kids did besides mooch off of him. You know, sometimes I was kind of on Paul Sorvino's side. I'm just like, yeah,
right.
These kids are
yeah.
When it came to his kids, absolutely.
His kids are the worst.
His kids are the worst.
They're all horrible.
I have a question.
Yeah, what's your question?
Could it be as simple as Pavi is Italian because it's an opera?
Well, and Roddy.
But nobody else is.
Right.
But also, Roddy is like a super good operatic singer as well.
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah.
He has
but
an amazing
like all
voice
three
for this.
Of the kids, like you can tell that all three of the kids can stay on pitch, but because of the characterization, they sing horribly. And it's
oh my
hilarious.
Gosh.
Except for Paris.
Especially
Hilton.
Luigi.
Oh,
she
Luigi
was-
is just. Yike.
Paris Hilton was auto-tuned. You can just hear it.
She was mm-hmm. absolutely auto-tuned, mm-hmm. but I didn't hate it.
I prefer
it. The character. But yeah.
Now Paris Hilton has come a long way in recent years and
yep.
as far as, you know, being less Paris Hilton. But I feel like...
Humble?
I feel like I in this know. Movie, she was just playing Paris Hilton in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Well, I say let's really...
playing herself.
I say let's really get into the... Let's get into the history of Paris Hilton. Carrie, would you like to explain, like, the very first thing, like, the first movie that Paris Hilton made? Just feel free to give us an explanation. We'll sit here and
yeah,
wait.
Yeah, and like, get, like, deep into the plot, the scene work, yeah. like, scene by scene. We want to hear your take on Paris Hilton's first visual media.
Yeah, first video, first, you know.
Dude. I don't think I can even name any, aside from this.
She was in House of Wax, you monster.
She was in House of Wax?
Yeah, she was.
I think. I'm not.
Did I see House of Wax?
That's one way
Probably
to. That's one way
not.
To call it.
Oh. Oh.
Look, I had to scroll through like an entire page of results to get to her IMDb.
It wouldn't be on IMDb, I don't think.
No.
I think Whitney knows what I'm talking about.
What Nick and I are referencing is porn.
Oh, One Night in Paris?
Night in Paris,
that was actually
exactly.
the tape's name.
Yeah.
That was the tape's name.
And Paige, I believe the same friend in college may have mentioned that to the both of us. I heard about that from Courtney.
Okay, I was about to say, is this the friend who liked to strangle dolphins?
Yes, it is that okay. same friend.
Okay.
Listen, she was in Zoolander.
She was.
Yes. As
playing herself, right? Yeah.
Yes. She was in a bunch of other stuff I've never heard of. She was apparently in The Cat in the Hat as a female club goer.
Oh my God. Okay. Mm.
She was in the TV series Las Vegas in one episode.
Okay. Nah.
Fam. You know what? Las Vegas is horrible, but I do enjoy it.
She was apparently in an episode of Veronica Mars, which I loved, and I do not remember that, so it must have been a small part. And yes, House of Wax.
Yes,
Snakes
Paige,
on a Plane.
What do you have
uncredited
to say,
passenger.
I have a question.
This is why we don't use the hand raise button, because it makes us all laugh so much.
I have a question about Las Vegas. Is
yes,
okay.
It's a city in Nevada.
That's not what I was going to ask.
Sorry. Yeah.
Thank you for following that. Is that the show where Hugh Jackman plays a cop and it's a musical?
No.
Never mind.
That's The Music Man.
Okay. We got trouble right here in River City.
And I'm the only one that has the authority to do anything about this drug.
You know, friends, we've gotten off the rails a lot faster than usual.
Okay, so Roddy has three children, right?
Roddy has three children. And they're nightmare children.
And naturally, like any person with nightmare children, with a large inheritance and a large genetic cloning organ repossession company, you think, I'm not going to leave this company with my own children. I'm going to leave it with somebody else's. How about my ex-girlfriend's child, for which she had with a man she left me for, who works for me because I blackmailed him? And so that's where we get...
You say it like that's not logical.
Yeah. It's more blackmail.
It's like what you do.
Yeah.
Which
it's a totally logical chain of thought.
Yeah. And that's how we meet Shiloh, this goth princess.
You ruined my life. I'm going to give your daughter the most important business in history.
And
just to get back at you.
Just to get back at you. And there's nothing can do about it. So we need this.
Also, yes. Shiloh has like Avril Lavigne vibes, which I'm not hating.
No.
Not hating at all.
Love the style.
I would like to mention that Shiloh is Carmen from Spy Kids.
Oh, shit.
I would like to mention that.
You're right.
The main girl from Spy Kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, she recently like accidentally cut off her child's finger.
Oh,
I
pretty punk rock.
Hear about this.
It was, I guess his finger got caught in like a door or something.
Surgery.
And it cut
surgery.
The tip off.
It required surgery. Surgery.
did she give him Zydrate?
I'm sorry.
Oh man.
I'm sorry. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Yes, I'm here.
You only hear the
final.
Yeah, I hear the edits.
Okay.
While getting the kids ready for bed, I shut Kingston's fingers in the hinge of the bathroom door.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Well.
This makes a lot of sense because I hear the final podcast, which is the stuff you decide to leave in, which is crazy. So I can't wait.
Yeah, now you're experiencing it firsthand.
I mean, I've been in a room with the three of you before, so I'm aware of what happens.
Editing this podcast is not easy.
It's not. It is
it's
not.
It's fucking time consuming.
Before we move on, I have a follow-up question.
Okay. To Las Vegas?
Yes. Nevada is a state in the United States.
No, to the finger.
To the finger.
How much money off the top of your head do you think it would cost to get a new finger from Geneco?
It depends on which finger. I think that if you have to get a pinky from Geneco, it's a lot cheaper than if it's like your index finger.
But what if, because it's cheaper, you choose to get a pinky on your index finger?
That's an interesting... Hmm.
Here's the thing, though. The kid got his middle finger severed from the first knuckle up.
Oh.
And I feel like that's a little bit... Like, the middle finger, it's very important. You have to have that.
You need it through the course of your life for various reasons. Yeah,
you need it for various reasons, but most importantly, to let everyone know that they're an asshole. So, like, I feel like that would be the most expensive finger, but replacing such a small amount of it, and now I'm starting to feel really badly because we're talking about this child.
We can edit that out, but I'm going to say $15,000.
$15,000.
I would say that if you get rid of the middle finger, if you get rid of the middle finger at the tip, it just makes it as big as the index finger. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A little shorter on me. Yeah.
Okay.
A little shorter on me too. Depends on how your hands are shaped, Nick.
Yeah. It depends on your genetics, my dear.
I mean, it for me as well, but that's besides the point. Let's not bring facts into this, okay?
Yeah, no, we don't like facts.
Let's not bring facts into this.
I feel like making it shorter than my ring finger would be more upsetting to me than it being the same length as my index.
Well, you're like on your way to being Jerry Garcia. You're like 1/4 Jerry Garcia. And that's not a bad thing.
You right?
Okay, so
did that answer your Nevada question, Paige?
That answered my question. So I guess Shiloh, because she has this rare blood disease that she inherited from her mother, dun dun dun, she can't go outside. But you know when she does go outside?
All the time.
She goes to a graveyard every time to talk to the grave of her mother.
Who she never met.
But there's holograms of her everywhere.
Which is creepy.
So it's just like...
And also kind of awesome.
Yeah. And I feel like you could have a better conversation with a hologram than you could a gravestone.
Yeah.
But it's the symbolism, man. It's the symbolism.
Right. She wouldn't have to leave the house.
And how would she meet the gravedigger if she's not in the graveyard?
Right.
The grave robber.
Oh, that's right. Grave robber.
The grave robber.
Things that you see in a graveyard. I love that this entire movie is shot like a Rob Zombie music video. Like,
I was going to say a Dresden Dolls video.
Or like 1990 Smashing Pumpkins. Like they were clearly playing.
Any of those like punk rock, hard rock music videos from the late 90s, early 2000s, that is this movie.
Or when they shoot a play on stage so that people can watch it elsewhere, they're actually doing a video of it.
Do you want to know what's a really fun fact?
What's the fun fact, my dear?
The grave robber is the writer of the show. One of the co-writers.
Really?
It's even more clearly inspired by Rocky Horror. The weird guy with a white face is the writer.
That's so cool.
That makes me very happy.
Did you also know? I did a little research into this.
Good.
We love research.
They made a 10-minute spec short film in 2006 to like pitch it to some studios. Mm-hmm. It was just a 10-minute snippet of what the original stage thing was. And Michael Rooker played the Repo Man.
Are you serious?
Unfortunately, it is unreleased.
Oh.
And you can't find it anywhere. I searched. There's a picture, but that's it.
I honestly think that Anthony Stewart Head was amazing and perfect for that role.
Anthony Stewart Head.
I would also love to see Michael Rooker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Hang on.
Before this and like watching that whatever production of Hedwig that was with Anthony Head, like I was not like super into him just because like I kind of only knew him from Buffy. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, oh shit, why is this guy suddenly so badass? And I have no idea.
He is a total badass in this movie.
Yeah. Like,
I am the doctor, and I'm your father.
Slap!
Oh, man.
He really was the MVP of the whole operation, though. Like, out of
absolutely.
All the... Like, even with the songs, like, because the songs are kind of discombobulated, but, like, in, like, a way that I can forgive, just because it is experimental, and the original stage production that they did in California was directed by the guy who ended up directing all the Saw movies, or at least the first four.
Who directed this movie as well.
Yeah, so it's just like, I mean, they were playing to an audience who wouldn't normally gravitate to like musical theater.
Yeah, the guy who directed Saw 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like this is not anywhere near my wheelhouse. Like, I am not a person who enjoys gore. I am not a person who enjoys horror. And I fucking loved this movie. Like, this was fantastic. And I've been meaning to watch it for so long, but knowing the subject matter and knowing that it was going to be at least a little bit gory, which it was less gory than I was expecting, kept me from watching this movie for years and years.
Right.
Wow. You missed out.
Like, I get squeamish with needles and stuff. This was also my first time watching it, and I finished watching it 2 hours before we started recording.
Okay.
That's what Carrie said.
Which I just wanted to watch it that fresh, but I normally get squeamish with needles and like hospital type stuff, but I'm okay with ridiculous Sweeney Todd gore, like things that are just outrageous in that way. There was only one shot that made me uncomfortable, which was in the song that Paris Hilton was singing, and you saw like a needle go in, and I was
that was the one that got you.
Not when her face fell off. That's
because, like, well, when it's fake, I'm fine. When it's remotely close to being like, this is a thing that real hospitals do, for some reason it bothers me. I don't know why.
Zydrate comes in a little glass vial.
A little glass vial.
A little glass vial. Anyway, like, I used to have an issue with needles like that, but then I had to, you know, start getting blood tests like every 6 months, so I no longer have a thing with needles. So I get you, my friend. I get you.
Yeah.
Anytime the Repo Man was like ripping somebody's guts out, I was like,
I was like cheering on my couch. I'm like, get him.
Really?
I'm not very squeamish, so even when he like ripped out the dude's whole spine and checked the barcode
at
the bottom of it, you know, I was just like, oh cool, there's a barcode.
No, ma'am.
I loved it.
Very uncomfortable fantastic. With that.
I did make sure to watch it when Jack was not awake, though, because he doesn't understand what's going on. And I feel like that's, I don't want the gore getting into his brain. Like, that's a normal thing.
Yes. Because my mom let me watch the PBS Sweeney Todd with Angela Lansbury and George Hearn when I was like 5 years old. And they had to take butter knives away from me at the dinner table because I would grab one and go,
Paige!
Okay, well, you know what, Paige? You just made me very happy about my decision.
That's why I was
to not allow him to watch gory
good
things.
Job.
Holy
shit. I can't handle you. What the fuck is wrong with you, Paige?
I don't know.
Did you also, like, hold him up and be like, these are my friends?
No.
Like,
no.
Jesus.
Nick, how old were you when we watched
Sweeney Todd? Oh, the Sweeney Todd? Okay, so here's the thing, right? Here's the Sweeney Todd story. I don't know if that was the first time, but the first time we watched it, I was pretty young. I went over to your house one time, maybe a year after that we had seen Sweeney Todd, and we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do. And I was looking through your DVDs, and I said, we should make meat pies and watch Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, we had planned on making meat pies.
Oh, that's what it was.
I was in the process of making meat pies, and I said, why don't you go pick out a movie so that we can watch it while we eat dinner? And you came back.
I was probably 10
with,
or 11 or,
you were,
or.
I think you. It was when I first moved back to Indiana.
Wait, no, it was probably like 12.
That was
12 or 13,
2010.
Maybe?
So 12 or 13. 13. Just turned 13, maybe?
Yeah.
And you came over with the DVD for Sweeney Todd. And I was like, what the fuck, Nick?
But we did it.
That is dark.
Shortly after I watched Sweeney Todd in theaters. Front row, that was a bad decision, and also the reason why our friend Katie does not let me pick where we sit in movie theaters anymore.
In the splash zone.
Yeah, exactly. I went home and my mom was like, oh, I decided to make mincemeat pies. I was like, I'm not going to be able to eat these ever.
I eat them.
Let's go ahead and do it. And watch the
movie. It was great. It was the most immersive experience. Like, it was wonderful.
I bet. I fucking bet, dude.
You know what? We'll serve anyone, meaning anyone, and to anyone at all. Intermission.
I do sing "Nothing's Gonna Harm You" to Jack.
Oh, you told me that. Like, oh my God. When and, he grows up and sees Sweeney Todd, he's gonna have such a complex.
I can't wait for him to come up to me and go, "This is the fucking song you've been singing me as a lullaby."
When I have a kid, I'm going to sing "Apple Bottom Jeans" just to confuse
them. My apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur. Fur.
My dad's band, not the band he's in now, but the band he was in when I was very young, has a song called "Tie You Up," and it is about bondage sex.
Cool.
Yeah.
It is. And I used to go around when I was my son's age singing that song. Apparently, I embarrassed the crap out of my mom in the grocery store one time because I was on my hands and knees crawling around going, "Bark like a dog, mommy, bark like a dog."
I might be able to top that. When I was very young, my brother or my dad showed us The Producers. Mm. And so I used to run around singing "Springtime" for Hitler.
Beautiful. Hey, I wrote a film where Paige gets shot and vaporized in it.
Yeah.
That's true.
So
that is true.
I think we're in a good boat there.
Queen of the Center people, I was.
Zarseal. High priestess of the Center people.
Priestess of the Center people.
It was wonderful,
that
too.
That was the weirdest 8-hour shift of my life.
It's hard. An outstanding performance.
Emmy Award nominated. Wouldn't that be just great if that was that nominated for an Emmy?
It was not. It aired on PBS.
It was
so
eligible.
It could have been. It was eligible.
You should complain to Ball State about that bullshit.
I will.
They should have pushed that. They should have pushed
I know.
It hard.
Oh, let's man. Talk a little bit about Sarah fucking Brightman.
Oh my God.
I don't.
Was she. Was she the singer?
Yeah, she was Lime Mag.
Amazing soprano.
Oh. Me and Whitney were talking about this off mic. So she is famed for being one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's wives, one, and also being the original.
In what, the 80s?
Yeah. In,
I think so,
And being the original Christine Daae in Phantom of the Opera. And I don't know whether I'm making like a wrong character judgment of her and what she would do and what she wouldn't do in terms of providing her like singing voice, but I was just like, really? They got Sarah Brightman to do this avant-garde thing? And then when I think about it, like, wait a minute, Andrew Lloyd Webber did a lot of coke and convinced her to do a lot of weird shit.
So much cocaine. Like, if you think that Sarah Brightman is not used to weird ass shit just like happening around her, think about who she was married to and how much weird shit. This is the man who wrote Cats, for God's sake.
And she was in a production of Cats, too.
Yes, she was.
So anyone who willingly does that.
I have no problem believing that she was 100% happy about her role as Blind Cat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I could sing the way that she can sing, which everyone here has heard me sing, I may not be bad, but I am no Sarah Brightman.
So None of us are Sarah Brightman.
I take offense to that.
I would sell my soul for that woman's voice.
We do have two ICC alumni on this call, so you know.
Oh yeah,
it's me and Nichols.
I was a soprano at one point.
I was also a soprano at one point, but only in my first choir, and ever since then I've been an alto.
I think I was born an alto.
I did an audition.
I didn't have
fuck them up, Paige. Stick it to ICC, one of the best and most supportive organizations.
My parents' financial situation varied greatly from the time I was eligible for ICC and the time Nick was. So, I unfortunately missed out on some things, but it's not a big deal. I had my school choirs. I was in the Accents, which is the all girls choir for the school, which I loved.
I think that was also the all girls choir at my high school.
Really? The Accents?
I think so, remembering right.
That's hilarious.
Hey, it was that out my high school too.
Oh my gosh.
What?
Yes, it was.
I didn't go to your high school.
Because I didn't audition for high school.
we had these dresses that were just beautiful, and they, you know, it was a V cut, and there was a teeny tiny bit of cleavage. Not much. It was just the tippy top of the cleavage, right? And we went to this choir competition, and there was an all-girls choir from an all-girls school, which was like a Catholic school, and they called us sluts.
Wow.
For our, like, fraction of an inch of cleavage.
Oh, the early aughts.
Sluts.
I can't fathom that, because our accents every year at our Christmas concert did the most sexually charged rendition of Santa Baby.
Oh my God.
In like very short black dresses with slits up the sides. And all the parents were like, oh my gosh, my baby is up on stage. And my dad was like, are they watching the same shit that I'm watching? Like, yes, Paige.
I have something worse. So my high school show choir was all girls, and they were called Jade. Greenwood High School is predominantly white. Okay, so they sent our predominantly white Jade show choir to a competition, and they are singing the Chiquita Banana song in like full blown accent.
Oh my God. Now, listen, I will say all the music that we did was amazing and tasteful, and my choir director went on to be the music director at Purdue, so he had his shit together at least.
Mine was just none of that. Bag of shit. I was not in that show choir. I did not audition, but... But I was in the chamber choir, and we went to support them. And now that I'm like sitting,
you hear that? Paige is better than all of you. Damn, Paige.
So I have an idea that I want to see what you guys think.
Let's see.
Okay.
I took very, very, very many notes when watching this movie a couple hours ago.
Okay.
And I would like to present you with some moments that I really liked and some moments that I really did not like. And then we can discuss them.
Yes.
You want us to get through the whole list before we comment? Or do you want us to interrupt?
Stop. Yeah, we can do it. Interrupt.
I'm good at that.
We're very good at interrupting.
Oh, yes.
We do a lot of interrupting.
I'm just going to put my mic on mute now.
All right, Nichols, go ahead.
So, as soon as the movie started, the intro blew me away. The animated introduction to this movie, it was 100%. So charming, and the premise was just, the premise set it up so perfectly, and everything that I'd heard about this movie, when I was watching this animated intro, and I was like, well, this isn't the movie I've heard about. Like this is such a competent, animated, intricate piece. And I was like, what's cult classic about this? This should just be classic.
This is so good. Same reaction. Yes. I was like, oh, I didn't realize this was going to have like comic book flair to it. This is great art direction. Mm-hmm. This is really cool animation.
It was beautiful.
Like,
see, I watched this. Awesome. I watched this for the first time in like 2010 with our friend Parker's ex-girlfriend, Mindy. So there was she was obsessed with that movie and she wanted to show me. And like, I think it was like 2 o'clock in the morning or something. I just wasn't like ready for
That's the best time.
Yeah.
But 100%. So this was like the first time I'd watched it like lucidly. And I was like, oh, it does make sense. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Similarly, I watched it in like 2009, I think, because I was still living in Savannah, but we were all drinking heavily while watching it. So
I think that's probably one of the better ways to watch it.
Yeah, I remember really enjoying it. But there was a lot about the story that I forgot or never processed because, you know, alcohol.
That's fair.
Something that disappointed me. Mm-hmm. Right after that incredible intro, the grave robber comes on screen singing his first song. And at least when I was watching, it might have been my internet, his mouth was not synced up with the words.
Oh, no.
No, his mouth was not synced up when I watched it.
And it wasn't. I think that was just like an editing.
Yeah. I wrote down, I said, that is a shameful editing mistake considering the genius of the beginning that we just got.
Yeah.
Right. Not to mention that the grave robber's whole look is just It's immaculate. Like,
oh, yes. Yeah.
The makeup, the wig, the costume, mm-hmm. like, it's just the whole vibe is fantastic.
It's very intriguing.
And then to have something
yeah.
that crucial to be mm-hmm. off, mm-hmm. like, it just, it
was
took
sad.
Me out of it immediately. Yeah.
I wrote down, as soon as this first song starts, you get into the movie that people are aware of.
Yeah.
And I said, the cheese and the unpolished aesthetic is an immediate juxtaposition to the introduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was so clean and crisp.
Yeah.
And like to bring the comic book art back throughout the movie,
yes.
it was first of all a masterful concept, but yes. second, like because the live action part was so like campy and like mm-hmm. not super well executed, it was jarring every time it went back and forth.
Yeah.
Yes. I liked it though. Yeah. It kind of grew on me towards the end when it would
absolutely.
Cut to the animation, I was like, I understand what's going on right now.
Yeah.
I liked it.
As it went on, yeah, I agree.
The first time it jumped back into animation after the movie had gotten going, I was like, oh, okay, we're going to go back to this.
Yeah, you know? I was kind of like, oh, we're still doing this.
Yeah, and then it just became expected, and I got excited when it would come up, because it's like, oh, we're going to learn some backstory.
Yeah.
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Part of me really wishes that there were more, or that I did more research in actually trying to find footage of like the when they were just the band, the gallery, because like in mm-hmm. terms of like going back and forth and go back and forth, I have a theory, but I need to look up to see if it's in really what my assumption is correct or not. If all of these like interweaving stories were a part of their first like art installation in 10 separate operas that they just
yeah.
woven together, like, because part of me thinks like maybe it was set up that way because they were trying to Frankenstein several different ideas that they already had together. But I will have I will have to just look and see, man, because
that would make a lot of sense to me, because
yeah.
I know that they did like the 10-minute iterations, mm-hmm. and then the 2006 thing with Michael Rooker was a 10-minute short, which I'm assuming is mm-hmm. probably a direct translation of what they did on stage. And in the cast list of that Michael Rooker thing, like basically none of the characters are in it that are in the final movie. The Repo Man is the main one, and then like his daughter's not in it, Rhodey's not in it, like all these characters... But Pavi is in it.
Oh, God.
So there's like a few concepts that were in this 10-minute thing, but I feel like they might not have had the idea for the whole thing or had never done it. Or I think what you said is very possible, of it all being separate performances that they did, that they turned into this thing.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a series of music videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also why I made the Dresden Dolls comparison, because Dresden Dolls, like, was their thing was punk rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their whole shtick. And so it really kind of made that parallel for me, where it felt like it was going to be just music videos kind of stitched together into a plot.
Yeah. It was very intentional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything about this movie, I was like, that's 100% on purpose. There were no mistakes.
Everything was a choice.
Yeah. Everything was so on the nose of what they were trying. Like, they were successful in what they tried to do. Mm-hmm. truthful for the whole thing. Something that made me laugh a lot. When the doctor comes in at the very beginning to give Rhodey his, like, your dying sheet of paper. the elevator opens up and the two people cock a shotgun. And the guy goes, ah, right? After he says, you're dying and there's nothing you can do about it, one of the people whose shotgun is currently cocked pulls out a pistol and shoots the guy.
The henchmen / bodyguards who are just ladies in fishnets with guns.
Yeah.
The dominatrix bodyguards. Like, they I loved them. I thought they were fantastic.
Fishnets, no pants.
No pants. No need.
Sunglasses and like
pants. Who needs
and like
pants?
Metallic lipstick.
They probably got new legs,
yeah.
I'm assuming,
probably.
And they have to show them off.
They need to show them off.
Yeah, they have to show off the legs. I enjoyed that the two of them only had one line in the entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually I'm, like, against using women as wallpaper, you know, like that whole thing. But their presence was so good and so strong in every scene they were in. I was just like, oh, I can't ignore them. Like, they don't fade into the background.
Yeah. No. And especially when they shoot the
dolphin. They're there, they are there.
They're there.
Yeah.
And, like, also, it's in that gunshot, you don't hear a bang. You hear a, I reject this reality.
Yeah. Yes.
And yes. And that's fucking art right there.
Amazing. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to have my henchmen kill you.
Yeah.
Because I'm dying and there's nothing you can do about it. And you're just the poor bastard who gave me the
and
the
what
bad news.
Use are you to me if there's nothing that can be done about my terminal illness? Like,
yep.
I don't need you for anything. You've given me this result and now you're expendable.
Goodbye. Mm. I need to take this anger out on somebody.
Which, that is something that this character did all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was really interesting to me that he was like, I know that, like, punishing you in a different way would be more effective. However, I truly do not care about anyone. So I'll just get rid of you and I'll hire someone else to fill
and that
your position.
It worked. It was so good.
It was wild. The thing that actually had me cackle out loud in this movie, when Shiloh is first picked up in the limo and Roddy is singing, right? There is a shot where the camera is outside of the limo as it drives by and you just hear really muffled. I just laughed my ass off. It was so funny to me. Just a muffled operatic singing coming as a limo just drives by. I said, what a great choice.
He's like a fucking great tenor. And like when you have the shot with him, it's such a pure, beautiful vibrato note. And then it's just like, as he's driving by, like this is what everyone else is hearing.
Right. Yeah. Which,
like, it's fantastic.
The thing that's so fun about that.
It's such a silly thing to put in there. And I love it.
It's so fun because it implies, like, most of the time in an opera, everything is sung and it's just like in replacing the dialogue. Right.
Yeah.
But that implies that in the mood, like, he is singing currently
in real life,
and if anyone was near the limo as it drove by, they would hear him singing because he's so loud.
What the fuck? Who the fuck is singing?
They're like, what the hell?
Okay, so Whitney, our friend Brandon in college would always make a reference to that Paul Sorvino note. Like, he'd be like at random down the hallway.
Honestly, like,
in the hallways.
I 100% forgot about that. And now that you're bringing it up, everything about his behavior makes a lot of fucking sense.
Always. Yeah. Now I'm having like a flood of memories also washed over me, because now I'm like, now I can't hear Paul Sorvino's voice, but I can hear Brandon's voice going.
I also like, speaking of things that just like click, for a little while on TikTok, the Zydrate song was a sound that was going around. And I was losing my mind trying to figure out where this sound came from, because I was like, okay, Zydrate, that doesn't come up with anything. Okay, it comes in a little glass vial. That doesn't come up with anything. What the fuck is this from?
And then you finally found it.
And then I finally see that and I'm like, fuck me. What the fuck am I on?
One person who created that sound is very happy.
Yes.
Very happy I was suffering throughout this entire ordeal.
You know, before they made this into a 10-minute short film, it was actually a stage play.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was being performed for years. And the guy who wrote it was inspired because a friend of his was like going through bankruptcy and all of his shit was being repossessed. And he was like, yeah, wouldn't it suck if it wasn't just your stuff, but like your organs too?
Look
at it. Oh my god,
I'll tell you right now, and I'm sure Paige is going to agree with me, the best ideas come from your friend going, wouldn't it be crazy if blank went with blank?
Wouldn't it be wild if somebody wrote a fucking speed musical? Like, oh my god.
That Jane Eyre musical sucked.
God.
Wouldn't it be cool if someone made a better one?
Oh, yeah.
And changed the ending?
And changed the ending.
Changed the ending better and more satisfying?
Yes. Made Rochester less of a dick.
Oh, you have any idea how many people hate that Jane Eyre musical?
Oh, it's the worst. The existing, like, mainstream Jane Eyre musical is the worst musical adaptation of anything you can fucking find me. Like, it's so bad.
I have something to say.
Yes, ma'am.
Go look up, I mean, the best Rochester I've ever seen. I watched a Japanese bootleg of Jane Eyre, of that musical, and their Rochester is fantastic. It's like, he's just like, I will say, there is one cast that fucking killed that show in a great way, and it's like the Japanese cast, and it's awesome.
That's the only good one.
And I killed them. I'm sorry. Back to Repo.
I wanted to bring up the Thankless Job song, which is where the Repo Man is like, has someone strapped to a table.
Yeah.
A great performance, a great song, way too many cartoon sound effects in the background of that song.
Yeah.
Yes.
He pops into frame and it goes, pew! And I was like, what just happened?
But when he turns the guy into a ventriloquist dummy.
I can't.
It's amazing.
I hated it so much. I loved it so uncomfortable. We all know that I love it when people make me uncomfortable with their media, with their work, because I think that that's
being challenged, Whitney.
I fucking hated that part.
I loved it.
I thought it was brilliant.
I thought it was amazing. It was so funny.
I think it was smart. I think it was jarring. I think it was brilliant. I also think it was the worst thing I've ever experienced.
I feel like he was blackmailed basically into doing this job.
And then he slowly got corrupted.
He's really good at it. And so I feel like he's losing his mind a little bit. And so then that's what leads to him, you know, using a dead guy as a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah.
And we've made the Sweeney comparison with this a couple of times already, but like in that song especially, and in the song where he's like the I Remember song, I can't remember what the title of the actual song is, but that was very Sweeney to me, because it was like, put a knife in my hand and I'll do whatever the knife needs me to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. And personifying the weapon.
Loved that. Yeah, yes. Personifying the weapon, exactly.
You're mine. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When the whole time that I was watching that Thankless Job thing, I said, this is what the dentist in Little Shop should be.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
Someone needs to do the dentist from Little Shop. They need to stage it like that.
Because it's perfect.
I think they attempted that take in the new revival. The one where Chris Borley is the dentist. Yeah. Mm. They actually tried to like make it a little bit more lean into the blood a little bit more and not be so tongue-in-cheek about like, ha, we're eating human beings, that did is abusive. Nah, he's actually really terrifying, right. And you should establish him as a terrifying figure to begin with.
That's great, because I have often, like, we know, like, it's important to offset your horror with humor, because otherwise you're just watching something that is gonna take you down into a really dark place. But it's important to understand that these characters are genuinely terrifying people, and the fact that the creators behind these characters and the actors behind these characters can make you laugh and forget for like a second that they're these horrifying humans. Mm-hmm. Like that's wild to me. And it's also super important. And I love to see that.
That's why Cabin in the Woods is so good, in my opinion, is because you can laugh at all of those aspects. You can laugh.
I love Cabin in the Woods so much.
Cabin in the Woods turned me on to horror movies.
Yeah.
Really?
That was the first one. That was the first one that I was like, I think I can get behind this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I know now what the purpose of horror movies are, and I think that if I can find humor in them,
it was so, you did not know what you were getting until and even then, like after the fact, it was so many different kinds of horror stories wrapped in one. I'm like,
it was brilliant.
It's so good.
It's one of those, you know, looking back on really just about anything Joss Whedon has done, it makes you so sad to find out he's such a garbage human being, because he is a brilliant storyteller.
Super talented.
He really is. Yeah. He has an eye for the way he tells a story and it just sucks you in. And even if you're a fan of his and you've seen everything he's ever done, he can still surprise you. And yeah. I love that. And I'm so upset that he is such a garbage human being.
Well, and it also makes me feel like, you know, I'm missing out on stuff because once I find out that somebody is a garbage human like Joss Whedon or like J.K. Rowling, I will not give them money. Mm-hmm. So like I want the continuation of those stories and I want to know that content and I want to know how the story ends, but I will not give them money.
Yeah, I'm really because I can go back, I can watch things that he's made and I can disconnect them in my brain from him. But if anyone gives him the time of day to let him make something else ever again, I don't know if I'll be able to watch it. And if I do, I'll have to pirate it.
And Firefly is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And if I didn't already have it on DVD, I would only pirate it. Because I can't.
Well, and that is an interesting discussion that could turn into a whole thing. But I feel like watching something that someone has made is different than like actively supporting it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that like, hey, I'm not going to go crowdfund J.K. Rowling's next book.
No. Right.
But like, I have Harry Potter and I'll read Harry Potter.
Yes.
Because it's a good book. And it's an interesting balance there.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention, like, you can still read Harry Potter. You can still enjoy Harry Potter while still acknowledging the problematic subject matter within the books and the movies. It's the financial support of the person that is where I draw the line.
Yeah, and the fact that like she hasn't changed her tune at all.
Yeah.
She won't even listen to the people that she's hurting, which is interesting from a writer's perspective, because I mean, we all get in the business of storytelling because we feel and we empathize and we're curious, but to have somebody create such a vast and complicated world and not want to listen to the vast complicated world that she's actually in reality, just that I think that's the thing with J.K. Rowling that like I don't understand. Why are you still telling stories? Why do you still want to? Because you are no longer curious.
No,
it's baffling.
Well, and the way that she tries to take credit for being inclusive by saying, oh yes, this character exists, he's not in the books, or this character is gay, even though I never said it in the books,
even though I never mentioned it,
you know. it's very frustrating. Just, you're not going to be inclusive unless you include it in the subject matter. Even if you have it jotted in your notes where you did a you know, a whole character write-up profile about this person, it's never brought up.
No.
Not even a passing comment.
Mm. Well, and I just read like a Nerdist article about the new Fantastic Beasts movie and talking about replacing Johnny Depp with Mads Mikkelsen. Mm. And I'm just like, yes, Johnny Depp was a problem in these movies, but you're still not going to get the fucking box office numbers that you want because some of this movie goes to J.K. Rowling, and the transgender community and the queer community are going to support the people that they want to support and not support the people who are hateful towards them. So
I will watch it. I will not pay for it.
No, I will not pay for it. If nothing else, I will pirate it after the fact. And I do enjoy Mads Mikkelsen as an actor.
He's wonderful.
I think he's fantastic. He's very disturbing. He plays disturbing characters very well.
Him as Hannibal, he should have always been Hannibal.
I've heard very good things.
He should have always been Hannibal.
He wasn't famous until like after that.
He was a name, but he wasn't a big name until.
No, Hannibal. Wasn't he a dancer?
He's perfect.
I think he
a ballet dancer at one point?
Let's look that
I up. Hope so, because that's amazing.
In the meantime, I found a way to connect us back to Repo.
Sometimes we just have to stop and go, oh, hang on, let's get back.
All right, so we got problematic people.
Hold up. Originally a gymnast and dancer, yes.
Good.
Gymnast?
So are you going to talk about dancing? Let's talk about the dancing. Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say problematic people goes to Joss Whedon.
Yes.
Goes to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep.
Goes to Anthony Head.
Back to Giles.
Goes back to Repo.
Look at you finding the thread.
Seven degrees of Kevin Bacon with Repo.
Yeah.
With problematic.
Joan Jett was in this movie.
Yes.
She was in this movie.
I loved it so much. It was amazing.
Joan Jett was in it.
Yeah.
In like a fantasy sequence.
Yeah. Anthony Head slapped his daughter in front of Joan Jett.
In front of Joan Jett. Yeah. Yes. That was wild.
Yes. Well, the whole so that song's going on. She's singing about being 17. And
and that was the point where I was like, Avril Lavigne.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So she's singing this song and, you know, it's a fantasy sequence. She's no longer wearing the cute frilly little outfit. She's wearing a very punk rock outfit and like her teddy bears are dancing and there's a fucking skeleton.
Yeah, skeleton dancing.
Dancing. And that then was choice. Like halfway through the song, then suddenly Joan Jett is there too.
And she's like, I approve of this bedroom.
And I loved it so much because it made no...
this bedroom is just goth enough for me.
it made no sense for Joan Jett to be there.
No, and it
made perfect sense for Joan Jett to be there.
It was fucking wonderful.
I loved
that
it.
Sequence, I felt very conflicted about that sequence. Because the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, this is a very intentional movie, but I'm not sure my personal opinion about it yet. Like, there are parts of it that I really liked and then parts of it that I didn't. And I was like, I don't know how I feel yet. I'm liking it, but I don't know how I'm ultimately feeling. And then I really liked the number that was right before 17 that he was singing to her and everything. Mm-hmm. And then 17 happened and I saw the dancing stuffed animals and I went, I was right there. I was on the cusp of being like... I was like, you had me. I was right there. And then it just took me right out of it. But I still like it. It was just, I was like, man, I was right on the edge of being like, this has been a solid 5 minutes. I like this last 5 minutes. Par for the course.
I really enjoyed that number, not for what the number was, but for like Shiloh taking her agency or attempting to take her agency with her father. And that was super important to me because you don't see a whole lot of young women in movies being like, fuck you, dad, I'm going to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it ended with the slap to the face and like order being restored temporarily or whatever, like it was still the feel and the aura of that song really resonated with me.
That's why it was so perfect for Joan Jett to be in that sequence.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Joan Jett, that's what Joan Jett has represented for her entire career.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like seeing Joan Jett in that, like one of my favorite songs is I Hate Myself. Mm-hmm. And that kind of resonates with me in the same way. Like, I'm trying to take my agency back. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. And there's something that's standing in my way.
Something that I found interesting, and I don't know if I was reading too far into this, but I want to believe that this was intentional. I liked that there was a moment when Rhodey put on his toupee.
That was a great wig.
And then he had a little blemish on his face, and he covered it up with makeup. And I found it very interesting that instead of removing it or getting surgery, he decided to cover it up with makeup the old-fashioned way. And in my head, it's because he knows what he's doing and he doesn't want to be involved with surgeries or anything that could even rope him into this situation that he's putting other people into. I don't know if that was intentional, but I like to think it was, because I think that covering it up with makeup was such a simple visual thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was because he's looking at his kids who are addicted to surgery. Like, Luigi has scars all over his torso. Amber is famous for having all of these surgeries. Pavi has someone else's fucking face on his head.
And he switches them.
Yeah. I think that this is a man who saw his children addicted to surgery in this empire that he created and said, I'm not touching that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I thought was awesome.
Because if he's terminal and there's any part of his body that he could replace in order to make himself not terminal, he has the power to do that. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that he told his doctors, no, I'm not going to replace that. And that's why the doctor at the beginning is like, there's nothing that we can do.
Yeah. Well, it was so interesting, too, because there was a moment where he was saying, like, how ironic is it that I've, like, given this to so many people and there's nothing I can do for myself.
Wow.
He's truly an evil dude. Oh, yeah. But there are moments in this movie where I'm like, is he the main character?
It shows his humanity really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is something that I like to remind my students not to go into, like, teacher brain, but, like, to look at these monsters that are in media and recognize that there is humanity in them. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. to not separate yourself and your humanity from theirs.
Yeah.
Because you can say that he's a monster, but, like, he's still human.
Arguably more human than any other person in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Because he hasn't done anything to him to alter himself.
Yeah. I think that is what makes him a good villain, any villain a good villain. You know, no matter how horrible they are, you want to be able to find a connection with them because you want the audience at some point to maybe understand them a little bit, maybe not agree with them, but to go, okay, yeah, I can see what made them turn into the person that they are.
Yeah, like the kind of thing where you're just like, if I were pushed to that limit,
yes,
I could mm-hmm. see myself considering that choice. Maybe not making mm-hmm. that choice, but at least considering it.
At least it's a thought in my brain. Maybe one I would never even consider, but it popped up.
It's like
intrusive
it starts,
thoughts.
Yeah. And I think it kind of starts with like the way that he tackles everyday problems. Mm-hmm, you can see that with that mindset, how he could do what he'd do in the situation.
Yeah.
Like with his like ungrateful children and all these things, it doesn't change the fact that like he makes bad decisions and chooses to.
Oh, exactly.
But in the situation he's in, knowing the way he thinks, you're like, I get what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and he's a much better villain than his children. His children are all horrible and not a single one of them has anything that makes you connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
No. They're just horrible for the sake of being horrible.
Because they grew up in a system where it was all benefiting them.
Yeah,
they grew up with that privilege.
Which I think, you know, I don't think you're supposed to despise them. There's not supposed to be anything redeeming about them, and there's not.
Right.
Not a single one of them.
I couldn't.
I mean, Luigi just kills people for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. Just, oh, you're in my way. Let me kill you.
There's also that part where Luigi is like, if I can't find a hole to fuck, I'll make one, and then stabs somebody.
No. Yes.
And you're just like, oh, these people are horrifying.
Yes.
At the last bit of my notes that I had, I said, if there's anything this movie has a surplus of, it's incredible production design.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
The vibes are immaculate in this movie. Yeah.
I mean, the scenery and the lighting and everything about it just drew you in and it really set the stage.
You could tell how competent the people making it.
Yeah, they were very clear about the world they wanted to create.
100%. Yes.
And I kept thinking, why on earth does Shiloh want to go outside so bad? Outside sucks.
Outside looks so horrible.
It's
why do you want to go out there?
Why? Stay in your room. Yeah. At least it's pretty.
Green finch and bird, nightingale, blackbird. Why is it you sing? That's why.
Yeah.
If I cannot sing
in a graveyard.
If I cannot sing, let me
try. The chorus in the graveyard was fucking beautiful.
And haunting.
Haunting. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. Like, the costumes, the makeup, like, y'all know that's my fucking shtick. Like, I am so about it. Like, this whole movie, the vibe was absolutely immaculate. Mm-hmm. I have no notes for the costumes, the makeup, the production design, nothing. Everything that was visual was so striking.
It's
even
high
the stuff that was
from you.
And the oh my god.
I
so
mean,
yes.
Anything that was meant to make you uncomfortable did so. Anything that was meant to be gorgeous but like in a really unsettling way, like fucking Mags's eyes, like god.
I loved them.
So good.
Also, the CGI in this movie was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yes.
For 2008.
I think it was I think that it was good because, like, they recognized nothing that we do in CGI is going to look realistic.
Yeah.
So we're going to lean into the fact that it does not look realistic.
Yes.
The biggest issue with CGI is people trying to do hyper-realism.
Yes.
Because it is going to be a long time before we get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are tricks to keep it. Like, Jurassic Park looked amazing, mm-hmm. but that's because everyone thinks about the dinosaur and it was nighttime and it was raining, and that obscured yeah. all of the effects mm-hmm. for that dinosaur. When you first see the dinosaurs in that yeah. movie and it's daytime, they don't look that good.
No, but not to mention that, like, the vast majority of the original Jurassic Park was animatronics and not computer generated.
Yeah. Yeah.
They used CGI to supplement it.
To supplement yeah. it, yeah. Exactly.
They had no plan. They were actually going to be using Ray Harryhausen and having him stop motion the dinosaur.
Harryhausen, though.
Yeah, well, he had done this whole sequence where the dinosaur was running after the car and it was all yeah. stop motion. And it didn't look real because stop motion can only get so far. And yeah. there was a production person in the animator team who was like, I think that I could do a fully CG dinosaur that's running after them.
Yeah.
And Spielberg said, that's very cool. Don't do it. And the guy said, okay, I won't. And then did it on his own free time.
Yeah. And then showed Steven.
Yeah. Yeah, so the producers and the directors had a sit down where they were going to look at some test footage, and the guy who had done the render slipped the run cycle into the test footage, so they watched it on a big screen.
Love
and
that.
they watched it, and Steven was like, that's amazing. Who did that? And the lead editor was like, I don't know, but I'm glad you like it. Let's put it in the movie. And he changed cinema. Changed yeah. cinema by because he was like, I know this is good and I have to show Steven Spielberg.
Well, and that's why Jurassic Park still mm-hmm. holds up. It's why the fucking Dark Crystal TV series on Netflix mm-hmm. was so good, because they used their CGI to supplement and to enhance the puppetry. Mm-hmm. Like, if yeah. you can marry those two things with the animatronics or the puppetry and CGI, that's mm-hmm. the way to make it look real.
Yep.
When definitely. You see the dinosaur from far away, it mm-hmm. is stop motion. When you see the dinosaur from really up close, it's a practical animatronic. And when you see mm-hmm. a full body dinosaur moving, it is CGI.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable marrying of technologies.
It is.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And this movie, 2008, it used CGI in the perfect mm-hmm. ways.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Me too.
I loved when Blind Mag decided to say, you can keep your eyes. I don't need them. Or
I'd rather be blind.
I'd rather be blind. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And then she just ripped her own eyes out.
Yeah. I noticed that she had the, like, roach rings on her uh-huh. on her two index fingers, and I was like, what the fuck is she gonna do? Mm-hmm. Oh no, what the mm-hmm. fuck is she gonna do? And, like, just
it was amazing.
I have an issue with anything to do with, like, eyes and nose, and so, like, anything going up the nose or into the eyes, I get skeeved real bad, and this did skeeve me out, but oh my god, it was so good.
And it was a great moment, because she is literally the voice of Jinko.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is the voice of
and
Jinko.
And she's doing this in front of a
all
live
those people.
Audience.
Yes.
Yeah.
And saying it
mm-hmm.
directly, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out come my eyes. And then he cuts the rope and she falls to her death. Impaled on the yeah. fence there.
Which, like, set designer, we know we don't need to make those actually sharp. Hello.
Oh my gosh. But, I mean, it couldn't have ended any other way.
No. It was an incredible ending.
Yes.
Incredible.
Also, I don't know, falling from that height, I don't know if they had to be sharp.
Probably not.
They could have been pretty blunt and still done
pretty
damage.
Pointy. Yeah. Like, but yeah. the only thing is that they were pointy. So, like,
they were
didn't
very
have to
pointy.
Be sharpened or anything,
yeah.
but that's still a sharp point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sliced through her pretty easily. So,
yeah.
I feel like
oh,
it was
yeah.
probably kind of sharp.
Also, she was probably already dead before she fell, because those nails were pretty long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
Yeah, it didn't seem like she was dead, though.
I I don't know.
Giving her brain a little
Sarah Brightman.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
She tore out the ocular nerve.
Were you dead before you were dropped on the fence?
Yeah, I have some questions for you, Sarah Brightman.
Ms. Brightman, we have many questions for you, such as what was it like being married to a coke fiend for so long? But also, did you tickle your brain with those roach rings?
It's like the old Egyptian thing. She was just trying to get her brain out before death so it could be saved.
There you go.
Are you and Jane Fonda going to start a support group?
Oh, hell yeah.
Ex-wives of megalomaniacs.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's a big support group.
That is a huge support group, especially in Hollywood. God damn. Yeah. Well, I think that we've gotten through the movie for the most part. So let's get through to our questions. Did we enjoy it and would we recommend it?
I loved it. I loved it so much. I think it was beautiful. The story was unique. Some of the songs, it was a little like, okay.
Yeah.
It's a stretch here. You're really pushing it. But I think the overall story and the majority of the music and the character development was very good. I love the set design. I would recommend it to a lot of people. But I think that if you don't like dark stories, if you don't at least have a slight appreciation for theater, then you probably wouldn't appreciate this film because it's very theatrical. I felt the whole time watching it like I would love to see a stage production of this.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Absolutely.
It started off that way, so of course it would make a great stage production. But I think most people, if they gave it a chance, would find some enjoyment out of it.
I guess my overall thing, at the very beginning of the movie, I said, I am in love with this concept. I'm loving this.
Yeah.
And the movie throughout gave me, I don't know, I was unsure of how I felt about it. There were some moments in this movie that I went, that is brilliant. I loved the opening number of the Genetic Opera, probably my favorite sequence of the movie. And there was lots of parts where I went, this is brilliantly made. And other parts that I just didn't like as much. But I think at the end of the movie, I was like, I did enjoy myself.
Yeah.
Overall, I liked the movie a lot. And I would recommend it to specific people. I think that, I don't know. I feel like all people who work in a creative field should watch it.
Yes.
And yeah, I think I would not say, hey, you might like it, you might not like it, but you will get things from it.
Yeah.
And if you watch it with a creative eye or even like any minutia of an analytical mind, you will realize that it was super intentional. And intentional is a word I like to use a lot with movies, but it's like it was all on purpose. The whole thing was planned and executed successfully.
Mm-hmm. Well, and having a movie that from start to finish is intentional is
rare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this film is a perfect example of something that I say often to describe movies. You have to be a competent and talented filmmaker to make something this bizarre and unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because there are bad movies out there, like The Room, for an example. And then there are movies that people think are bad, but in reality, they're just weirder and more unique than you want.
Yeah.
You're expecting or that you're wanting out of a movie. And I think that this movie good? Maybe. Did it achieve it? Did it achieve its goal? Absolutely.
Yeah, it absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the reception when it first came out wasn't great.
No.
Right. Because people were like, oh, I'll go see a musical. Classic.
No.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that's like, it's so on the nose of what it wants to be. It knows what it is and it does it. And I think that means it's good.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Yeah. And it's an interesting discussion because there's a difference between do I like this movie and is this movie good? Mm-hmm. Because it is absolutely good. And I do like it. But those are two separate things.
But, well, as somebody who watched it, what was it, like 12 years ago? 12, 13 years ago? And not really recognizing the world that it's set in to now recognizing the world that it's set in. We are in the middle of a global pandemic with a lot of questions about what the illness does, what it's capable of. And also we do have a crippling healthcare system that they're not asking for repossession of our organs.
They're just denying service to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. So like it's the world that Repo is in is a little bit closer to what it was what it was when it first came out. So now if you're thinking about it, it really actually is ahead of its time in terms of predicting economic fallout.
Absolutely.
And how systems fall apart and how we start like looking at Amazon, Jeff Bezos, fuck that guy. But we rely on Amazon so much now.
Yeah,
so much.
To have our content given to us and have our groceries sent to us, like all through like last year. Like
I watched this movie on Prime Video.
Same.
Yeah, like seriously. Yeah, that's the closest.
I ordered most of our Christmas presents through Amazon. I've been ordering groceries through Amazon since before the pandemic.
Well, and that's the thing. Like I've had a couple of days where like I woke up, I was too dizzy to get out of bed. I can't go to the grocery like that. Mm-hmm. Like so I would order groceries from Amazon Fresh, and I hate doing it, but that's the fastest and easiest service to get groceries from.
And you know, having a kid, oh my God, having your groceries delivered makes life so much easier.
This world needs surgery.
I think that I would recommend this movie to Americans.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that it might, a lot of the concepts might be lost on countries that have
universal
healthcare. Don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when my wife was in Italy, she had to go to the hospital at one point and she was like, so how much do I owe you? And they went, what? She was like, well, how much do I owe? And they were like, nothing. You owe nothing? Go
home?
I
guess it depends on what country you're actually in that has socialized medicine. Because like in Canada, you can be waiting a month to even see a doctor.
It all has its own,
you may not get seen when your problem still exists.
There's definitely downsides.
I had a similar experience. Like I had, when I was in Ireland, I had to go to the hospital and like we were talking about like, oh, okay, I'm going to have to pay for the ambulance. Okay. I don't have to pay for the doctor visit, but I have to pay for the ambulance. The ambulance ride was $60 after I did the conversion, as opposed to upwards of $1,000-$2,000 here in the state.
Right. Honestly, the ambulance ride is like a 5-star review and a tip away from being Uber.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? That's becoming a very sadly common thing now, is people need to go to the hospital and they, instead of calling an ambulance, they're calling an Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's becoming really common.
Mm-hmm.
When I fell down the stairs when I was at home during lockdown, I texted my parents because they were out of town. And I was like, okay, do I call an Uber? Do I call an ambulance? What's going on? And they were like, your Aunt Sarah's home. Like, call your Aunt Sarah. Like, I had to call a relative to take me to the emergency room so I wouldn't have to pay for the trip there because I couldn't drive.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that that's like, there are countries that would relate, but this is definitely an American
a distinctively American problem.
Yes. Yeah,
definitely,
because we're terrible.
So I enjoyed this movie a lot, even with all the gore and all of the stuff that I didn't like about it. I enjoyed it in the same way that I enjoy Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
And I think that I enjoy a lot of cult movies like that,
definitely,
especially insofar as I would probably have enjoyed it even more if I was watching it with friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That was, I was thinking that the whole time.
Yes.
The whole time. Yeah. Yes. And being like, okay, some of this stuff is like, I would love to have friends here to just like either call this out or be like, oh my God, or like something, you know, just to have somebody to experience this with. And I would recommend it to absolutely everyone, especially people who it would make uncomfortable. Because I think that it's that kind of movie and it's that kind of story, and that discomfort is important for growth. And I think that, like Paige said, with it being so very parallel to how American society is right now, I think that it's an important story to consume, especially for people who live in this country and who may have the same sort of hardships that the people in the story have. Like, of course, the movie is exaggerated, and like you're not gonna have your organs repossessed yet. But it's like, this is something, I don't like employing the logical fallacy of slippery slope, but this is something that could feasibly be led to with how our society is right now.
Eventually. I mean, I feel like it would take a bit to get there, but it could happen. Yeah.
I don't think that it would be in any of our lifetimes, but it's the same kind of feeling I have about Mr. Burns, the electric
play.
Oh, God, that show.
It's the same feeling I have about that show where, like, by the time you get to Act 3, after, you know, it's been 90 years in this nuclear apocalypse, like, I can understand somebody writing a Simpsons opera that has nothing to fucking do with the Simpsons, just because that's your religion now. I get it.
Feasible. Likely, who knows? But feasible, absolutely.
Feasible, yes. So what about other forms of media? Because I think that this would lend itself real well to a graphic novel series.
I would love it as a graphic novel. I would really like to see the stage play.
That
was its first 100%. Iteration. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I don't think that it needs to be remade because I think it's perfect the way it is. There is a movie that came out 2 years later.
Repo Men.
And it's the exact same concept, but it's not a musical.
And it's not fun.
Wait a minute, is it the one with Jude
Law? The only good thing about it is that it has Jude Law in it.
Oh, God.
When it came out and I was in a theater and it was a preview and it came up and I was like, you know, it's Jude Law and Forest Whitaker. And I love them.
Yeah.
And I went, I'm not going to see that. I'm just not.
Yeah.
There's no way.
I remember seeing the trailer, but I don't remember what the trailer was. Like,
It was trying to be a serious movie.
Yeah. I have a scene of Jude Law, like, kneeling next to somebody in my head, but that's all I've got.
Yeah, this is not a concept, in my opinion, that would work in a serious film.
I agree.
I have a remake pitch.
Okay.
It is Repo 911. It is the exact same movie, but Thomas Lennon is the Repo Man. And he wears the booty shorts and the mustache. And then when he can like give someone a spine, he's like, just new spine goofing.
I love it.
I can't with you right now.
I love it.
Well, I do have the Wikipedia up that says that Alexa Vega has been quoted as saying, from the very, very beginning, we always talked about a prequel or a sequel to this film. And it's hard because as of right now, we all want to do it. But, you know, it didn't do as well as we hoped. We didn't really have a lot of support, but we're hoping
crowdfunding
will come back and it will be an underground cult classic that will grow and that will eventually spark us to do another.
Crowdfund.
Yeah. I'm super into it. I would watch a sequel or a prequel.
Oh, yeah. I think that this would work better in its original format on the stage.
Yes. Oh, yes. I think probably amazing that way.
And something that was interesting to me about the graphic novel that you were talking about, I think that the story would work really well in the novel, but I almost feel like it would be too transformative, for me at least, because to me, the whole, it's all riding on the fact that it's an opera.
Yeah.
Like, everything's sung. And I really like the story, but I almost wonder if it would lose its campiness being turned into a novelization or a graphic novel.
Yeah, and that's a fair point as well. And I think that if you did turn it into a graphic novel, there is something that would be lacking.
I don't think it would work as an actual novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it was a graphic novel, to me... It would seem like it'd be like a legitimate sci-fi trope that just had some goofy characters.
Yeah.
Sure.
But like the singing, I think, is the relief that we get from the topic.
Yes.
And I almost feel like it'd get really heavy if we didn't have it. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons I never wanted to see Repo Men.
Sure.
Right.
Because the music is what makes this film so wonderful, because you're getting amusement out of this. And it's literally a story where people are so fucking broke that they're dying and they have to finance organs to save their lives. And when they can't make the payments, because again, they're so fucking broke, someone murders them and takes the organ back. That is so dark. It's so dark.
Yeah.
And yet you're watching it and you're like laughing in parts and genuinely enjoying what's happening. And without the music,
I think that I would enjoy a graphic novel if it were written by Gerard Way. Because I feel like doing a graphic novel in the style of Umbrella Academy would be the only way that I would be able to enjoy that.
I could see that.
Yeah,
because that's the thing. I think there's a way you could do it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It would be so...
It would be a challenge.
I don't know. It'd be a little challenge because I would love to see this in a graphic novel because it would remind me of the opening.
Yeah.
But it also, to that point, the opening for me seemed like a completely different thing than the rest of it. And I loved the opening and I loved the concept. And then it turned into the movie that we know.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting to see a graphic novel, but I do think it would lend itself to more of a serious like audience and a serious scope, which could be good, could be bad, but it would be different.
I do want to touch really quick on back on the Repo Men movie and that it is not based on this. It is based on a book called The Repossession Mambo. However, The Repossession Mambo was published in 2009.
So Repo the Genetic Opera
2008 and being like even before that it was a stage play
it was a concept from
for years so I'm really curious because even on the Repo Men like Wikipedia it says see also Repo the Genetic Opera, a film involving a similar plot line regarding the repossession of transplanted organs. It's like it's a little too similar for me for it to be a coincidence and they came out 2 years apart. Like,
there is a lot to be said about like people having the same ideas about around the same time, but like it's very close. It's a little too close to be a coincidence. Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, when you type in Repo Organ Movie, Repo Men comes up and not.
Of course, it was more mainstream.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Stewart Head's amazing. But it's a lot easier to promote a movie with Jude Law and Forest Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they have a much higher status in Hollywood. You know, they're bigger names.
So I guess the long and short of it is fuck Repo Men and watch Repo the Genetic Opera.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
We don't need a book. Maybe a graphic novel.
Maybe if you can Gerard Way to write it. But otherwise, let's do the play.
I want the script from the play.
See, I was going to say, I think a graphic novel sequel or prequel would be cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not necessarily a graphic novel translation.
Yeah, no. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's crowdfund this. Let's get Gerard Way.
Call Gerard. Let's do it.
Yeah, who's got Gerard's number?
You know, I think it's
probably a bathroom stall. A bathroom stall somewhere has it.
My fingers.
Probably at an airport because he takes Xanax to fly. thank you so much for listening to How Very Strange. We hope you enjoyed our very in-depth discussion of Repo the Genetic Opera. And thank you so much to our special guest, Mr. Nicholas Rahrman.
Yes.
Nick, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, you can find me at So Far So Good Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. That's my sketch comedy group. You can also check out Schlim Corp, which is where we put short films and stuff. Watch Constellation Quest starring Paige Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Plugs.
But yeah, just follow us on YouTube, follow us on social media. We make a lot of fun stuff over there.
Awesome. If you have any suggestions of things for us to cover on the podcast, or if you just want to say hi, please email us at howverystrangepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at HVSpodcast and on Instagram at howverystrange. I'm Whitney Clater.
I'm Carrie McConnell.
And I'm Paige Scott.
And I'm Nicholas Rahrman. Thank you so much.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Nice.
And you guys are mad at me for being at the dinner table going.
Wasn't self-harm.
None of us ever threatened anybody. Buddy Paige. Child. None of us were brandishing weapons, Paige.
Well, your parents just never gave you a knife. My parents did.
I would like to remind everyone that Paige is the person who wrote a song called Shoot the Hostage. So we are not learning anything new about Paige right now.
That's true.
Cool.